1 Samuel chapter 16, verse 20. It was a couple of weeks ago we were in Samuel, in the book of Samuel, where he anointed king as David, and that David was then, by God's sovereignty, chosen by Saul, really Saul's men, to play the harp for King Saul whenever an evil spirit from God would trouble Saul, when God would allow an evil spirit of Satan to come into, to torment Saul, to give him sleeplessness, torment him, whatever was going on there. And so David would play the harp. He'd worship God with the harp in the midst of Saul, and the evil spirit would depart. And we're going to pick that up because it kind of flows into what we're going to do with the story of David and Goliath. And so verse 20, and Jesse, the father of David, took a donkey loaded with bread, a skin of wine, and a young goat, and sent them by his son David to Saul. And David came to Saul and stood before him, and he, David, loved him, Saul, greatly, and he became his armor-bearer, ultimately. And then Saul sent to Jesse, saying, please let David stand before me, for he has found favor in my sight. And so it was, whenever the Spirit from God was upon Saul, that David would take a harp and play it with his hand. Then Saul would become refreshed and well, and the distressing spirit would depart from him. And now, in context, we have to understand that at some point, Saul must have been relieved of this plague by God. And see, what God allowed Satan to do, apparently, because this distressing spirit to me was a demon. People would argue otherwise, but that's what I think. And God allowed that to happen so that Saul would seek after a harp player, and God knew he had already inspired David to be a harp player so that there was this relationship developed to where they knew each other. And so after that happened, I think that Saul said, okay, I'm doing okay, and sent David back home. Because the next verse in chapter 17, we see David back with his family. So David didn't stay there. We don't know how long he stayed there, but he didn't stay there forever, we know, because of chapter 17. Now the Philistines gathered their armies together to battle and were gathered at Shukoh, which belongs to Judah, and they encamped between Shukoh-Azekah and Ephes-Damim. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together, and they encamped in the valley of Elah and drew up in battle array against the Philistines. The Philistines stood on a mountain on one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side with a valley between them. Now, for those of us that went to Israel, what year was it? 2007. In 2007, our tour guide, we're driving on this kind of flat valley road, and bus comes to a stop. And he points over at these two little hills and a little valley in between, and he says, this is where the battle lines were drawn in the days of David and Goliath. The Philistines were on this side, the Israelis were on this side, and you can see the same thing in this book from Moody Maps, and it's map number 42, and it shows the whole battle there. And you can see in the lines that there's the red from Bethlehem. This is the journey that David had to take to go from Bethlehem to go to the battle that we're going to see. So he's going this way, and this isn't very long. In fact, you have to remember that down here you have 10 miles is that scale down there for those that can see it. So this is like 20 miles. So David, later on, we're going to see that he hikes 20 miles to go to the battlefront. And this is where it happened. They separate on the two hills. And then we were on this road down here. And then the tour guide stopped us and said, if I remember correctly, this was the Philistine side. And this was the Israeli side. And those are the two hills. And down in the middle of this valley is where they gathered for what we're about to read. Does that help? Make you want to go to Israel? See that place? It's kind of neat to have a holy book that's actually accurate, I mean, you can find all this stuff better than reading the Book of Mormon, and can't ever find anything that Joseph Smith dreamed up in his dreams to put in there. Verse 4, and a champion went out from the camp of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits in a span, and a cubit is 1.5 feet. So 6 is 9 feet, and a span is, call it 9 feet 10, is very nearly 10 feet tall. My span's 10. I don't know what yours is. And 10 feet tall, I mean, that's Pretty tall guy. In fact, Jeremy, how tall is this ceiling in here? Probably 10 foot. This is probably a 10-foot wall, so he's probably right up there. Okay, we have some negative. He's a carpenter, so I'm going to... 10 foot. Yeah. So he'd have to, you know, duck as he's walking through this room, hitting those vent ducts. And we know that from the Bible, it says that the Nephilim, in the Hebrew of Genesis chapter 6, the Nephilim, that word was translated giants in the King James Version. Nephilim means literally in the Hebrew, fallen ones. They were the offspring of the sons of God, which is a term used in the Old Testament for angels, going into the daughters of men, meaning daughters of men, meaning women, and Nephilim, fallen ones, giants, were born to them. And it says that it happened then and later. So that means that even after the flood, see, God wiped out all the Nephilim in the flood, but there was Nephilim after the flood. And Numbers even talks about this. Numbers is after the flood. Numbers 13:33. You can write this in your margin, look at it sometime. There we saw the giants. This is when the spies went into the land of Israel. We saw giants, the descendants of Anak, came from the Nephilim, the giants. And we were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight. And imagine you would feel like a little grasshopper walking up to a 10-foot tall, beefy guy. Now, it is my opinion that's shared with a lot of people, I got it from them, that I believe that there was some kind of interaction going on, and it could have just been somehow there were demonic hybrids. Somehow children were born to women that had a demonic trait because of what was going on with demons messing with women. It could have been an abduction and a planting of, you know, DNA to say, hey, we want some super tanks. You know, in those days, you created a super person, you create a secret weapon. So in the days of the Nephilim, these Nephilim just spread all their hate and discontent through all the land to destroy the people of God. And God had to destroy the whole world to get rid of the influence of the Nephilim before the flood. So then after the flood, God knows the next thing that, or Satan knows, the next plan of God is to let the Jews, His promised people, get into the land of Israel. So what would you do if you were Satan and you knew that God has promised the Jews are going to be going in the land of Israel? I would get myself some more demons willing to suffer the judgment of God, because we find out in Peter and Jude that whatever demons do this, whenever they leave their first domain to do these things they're not supposed to, they get immediately sent to Tartarus. The only place it's ever used in the Bible is in Peter talking about hell for angels, where they get locked up immediately. And so it appears that demons don't like to do that because they lose. It's like when Jesus went to go throw the demons out of the possessed man, Jesus, have you come to judge us before our time? We don't want to go to, they're basically saying, we don't want to go to Tartarus. We want to keep around until it's our time to go to the lake of fire. And so Jesus threw him into the swine. So Satan must have gotten some of his demons to do their thing again, to create more Nephilim, more demonic hybrids, and stuck them in the land of Israel saying, hey, Israel's not coming in here. I've got my giants here. This is what I really think was a strategy of Satan, is to create secret weapons in the form of human beings to do that. And, you know, some people speculate maybe they're around today, only it's no good to be a 10-foot guy today. You stick out like a sore thumb and you drop with a, you know, an M16 drops you just as good as if you're 6 foot tall. So what would be the thing today is to make them really brilliant, put them in a shirt and tie and get them, you know, to talk really good, have a lot of a charisma and get elected to office. And I'm making no specific analogies here. I'm just saying it could be happening. It could be happening today and we don't know what's going on. Joshua 15 verse 13. It says, this is another parallel verse. Now to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, he gave a share among the children of Judah according to the commandment of the Lord to Joshua, namely Kirjath Arba, which is Hebron, the city of Hebron, which was formerly Arba, was the father of Anak. So in other words, God gave Caleb victory over a man who was standing watch over a giant, giant at the day, that was a descendant of Anak, one of the Nephilim. He was in Hebron, and Caleb defeated him and was therefore given that city. Caleb drove out the three sons of Anak from there, and then he names the three sons children of Anak, giants. In strategic places in the Middle East, in Israel, that were there to thwart Israel coming into the Promised Land in accordance with the promises of God. So Satan had a plan. Satan is always trying to do something to thwart the plan of God, the promised plan of God. We have to understand it. You know, this Middle East situation is not just nations run amok. It's spiritually demonic forces that are at play in the hearts and minds of fallen people, creating this New World Order idea to wipe Israel off the map. Why? Because then the Bible's not true. Then God can't keep His promise. And that's what's happening. And every time it's been tried, they always lose, because God shows Himself faithful on behalf of His people. So, let's look at His other equipment, His super warrior stuff. He had a bronze helmet on his head, verse 5, and he was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze, 125 pounds, some people say. Can you imagine just walking around with a 125-pound backpack? I mean, that's what he's doing for his mail. Is basically, it's a ancient arrow and spear-proof vest. That's what the mail was, is somebody couldn't stab you because it would run into your chain mail. They couldn't shoot an arrow at you. You couldn't throw a spear at you. He's basically bulletproof. He's in their day, he looks bulletproof. And he had a bronze armor on his legs and a bronze javelin between his shoulders. Now the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam. And in those days, a weaver's beam, you know, to weave rugs and whatever with your wool, a weaver's beam, we know the size of a weaver's beam, and it weighed about 17 pounds. So took a huge chunk of wood that was a weaver's beam, they would weigh about 17 pounds, and his iron spearhead weighed 600 shekels, about 16 pounds, and a shield bearer went before him. So he's throwing a spear that's 33 pounds. Now, today, you know how much a shot put weighs? Remember those guys, those big beefy guys that throw a shot put? You know how much that weighs? 16 pounds. There must be some people that have used them before. His is 33 pounds, twice the weight of a shot put combined spear. And if you were looking at that spear, is your shield going to stop it? Absolutely not. Even if your shield opt the spear because it's all dull or something, you know, it's going to smack you in the face and knock you out. If you have something that weighs 33 pounds coming as fast as a man can throw, it hits anything you're throwing in front of it to block yourself, you're going down. In an analogy, it would be like somebody beaming down into the Civil War, and he's got an M1A1 Abrams tank, and the Union soldiers are coming, and he's got 50 calibers, he's got all the ammunition he needs, and who's going to win the battle? You know, it's like a giant in that day was like a secret weapon. Today, it would be like some secret brand new weapon that just completely obliterates your normal way of doing war. And that's what the Jews were looking at with their eyes. But David was looking with faith. Then he stood and cried out to the armies of Israel and said to them, "Why have you come out to line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? And you the servants of Saul? Choose a man from yourself and let him come down to me." And at that point, what should everybody have said that heard his voice on Israel's side? On Israel's side, what should they have said? Well, those are all good ones. I'm going to give you the one I'm thinking of. We're not servants of Saul. Are we servants of America today? Are we servants of the president? Are we servants of the Constitution? Are we servants of this or that? No, we're servants of the Most High God. Everybody should have said, we're not servants of Saul. He just happens to be our king. But we're here to serve God. And we see God's promises is bigger than your guy. bigger than your soul, you know, bigger than your armor, bigger than your spear, bigger than your... But only one man saw that. Only one man had the faith to speak the truth that day, and it was King David, what would become King David later on. But then he taunts and he says, if he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us. We have to understand, I do believe this man was a genetically modified demoniac. And he's filled with a demon spirit. Because I think that this demonic hybrid relationship, there's no soul from God. So we see in the Bible that people are possessed, that demons want to come in and go out. For some reason, there's some struggle there. Because even Jesus says that demons will go out and then they'll come back with seven others if the man just sweeps out his house. I've talked to many people that have dealt with demon-possessed people and they'll come and they'll go. Why? And they don't know. We don't know why there's this struggle. But if you have a demoniac, Nephilim, fallen one, human being without a soul from God because it was created in this perverted way, whatever was going on, then it is ready to go for a demon spirit to occupy it unhindered. And so we when we hear these taunts from Goliath, we're hearing the same taunt from Satan, don't we? You serve God, you'll die. But, you know, give it your best. If you're able to fight with me and kill me, then okay. But if I prevail against you, you're my slave. Now, what caused the Israelites to continue to fear Goliath? Their own skin. They were scared for their own life. So they kept hiding in their caves. They didn't step out in faith. They didn't go into the war. They didn't go into the battle because they didn't want to die. What does the Bible say about us? How do we overcome Satan? How do we overcome Goliath, the demons of our day? It says in Revelation 12:10, it says, then I heard the voice saying in heaven, now salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ have come, for the accuser of our brethren. Doesn't this sound a lot like Goliath? You know, just taunting and accusing and everything. The accuser of our brethren who accused them before our God day and night has been cast down, and they, us, overcame him, Satan, by the blood of the Lamb, by the word of their testimony, and they did not love their lives to the death. Satan and Goliath and anybody else cannot control us, defeat us, lead us if we're willing to die for Jesus. People can come in, you know, deny Jesus or else. They can't control us because we say, okay, or else. It's only when we want to hold on to a part of our life that Satan can control our life. Whether it's lust or pleasure, it says in the last days, perilous times will come. People will be lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. If you believe in God, you won't have that pleasure anymore. Oh, I want to preserve that part of myself. I'm not willing to let God kill that part of my flesh. So I guess I'll keep serving you because I don't want to die. Because Goliath was saying, you just serve us and I won't kill you. That's what Satan says to all of us. You serve me, you just serve your flesh, then I won't cause you to die. And we say, okay, you can't control me because I'm willing to die. I'm willing to die to that part of my flesh to serve my precious Jesus. And that he will give me power and authority over the flesh he's promised to if I'm willing to die. I can't take any questions. Unless, what?
Or we, I think it's useful to notice that David does not give the reverse challenge to Goliath.
Yeah.
He says he's going to destroy him and wipe him from the face of the earth.
Yeah, we're going to see. He doesn't say, okay, if I beat you, will you guys serve us? Because, you know, we don't want the world to serve us. The world's supposed to be destroyed. We'll see that when we get there. And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. Let's duel. Winner takes all. Just like the Arab world is planning against Israel right now. And they are putting such a formidable, you know, force around Israel right now. And they keep on building it up. Tens of thousands of missiles on your north. Jordan's going to turn and they're going to have their thousands of missiles and tanks and soldiers to your east. And Gaza's already turned, and now Egypt, because Egypt has fallen here in the last week, Egypt is now letting missiles come into Gaza. And so these missiles are coming from Egypt into Gaza, and we're going to have thousands of missiles on your south. And we've just allowed today Iranian warships to go through the Suez Canal. We're going to have Iranian ships on your Mediterranean coast to shut you down on the west. And we're going to have the United Nations ruling against you to create a Palestinian state. We've got the whole world against you, Israel. You're going down. And they'd be right if it weren't for God. Just like anybody that would have been looking with binoculars at this scene of a 10-foot man and all of Israel, and he's saying any one of these 6-foot guys or maybe even 7-foot Israeli, there's no way you're going to go against this guy. He's got his chainmail and stuff. There's nothing you can do. You'll clean your clock. But there was God. When Saul and all of Israel heard these words from the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. And it's only fear that keeps us from following God. The fear of man, the fear of what they'll say, the fear of being mocked and scorned for being a Christian, the fear of losing friends, the fear of backbiting by somebody because we're being serious about God. Only that fear can enslave us and make us shiver and shake instead of being bold and courageous for the things of God. Now, David was the son of that Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse, and who had 8 sons. And the man was old, advanced in years in the days of Saul. The 3 oldest sons of Jesse had gone to follow Saul to the battle. The names of his 3 sons who went to battle were Eliab, the firstborn, next to him Abinadab, and the 3rd Shammah. David was the youngest, and 3 oldest followed Saul. But David occasionally went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. So he would occasionally go see Saul and occasionally come back to feed the sheep. And when the Philistines drew near and presented himself 40 days, morning and evening. Does 40 days ring a bell? You know, 40 days in the Bible means judgment, trial, testing. After 40 days of testing, is anybody going to stand up? Is any human going to stand up? Again, it's kind of like, to me, I look at this as the same as Revelation, where John is weeping in heaven. There's nobody that's worthy to open the scroll, to open the scroll of the title deed of earth. And then the angels say, oh, don't worry, John, there's one. There is one. You know, Jesus, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, who is able to come and rescue the planet. See, 40 days, there's nobody. Nobody's willing to step up to the plate. God sends David. David is the type of Jesus in the Old Testament. He's going to take down Satan. Morning and evening. You know, Satan taunts us. Then Jesse said to his son David, take now for your brothers an ephah of this dried grain and these 10 loaves, and run to your brothers at the camp and carry these 10 cheeses to the captain of their 1,000 and see how your brothers fare and bring back news of them. Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah that we just saw here on this map, fighting with the Philistines. So David arose early in the morning, left the sheep with the keeper, and took the things and went to Jesse that Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the camp as the army was going out to the fight and shouting for the battle. They say they're fighting. All they're doing is shouting. You bad Philistines! You bad Israelites! That's what the church is doing nowadays. You know, we're just... You know, what's the real battle today? What is the battle for us Christians? Preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ wherever it needs to be preached. And then just ask yourselves and everybody else in the church in the world, how much of that is actually happening? Not a whole bunch. And the rest of it's all, you dirty pagans, you non-Christians, you should be in church. You should not be doing those things. And they're saying, I don't like your church. I don't like you Christians. And I don't like this. And I don't like that. And we're just shouting from the two mountains. Not really getting into the battle unless we're preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ to the lost. Unless we're bringing people to, do you believe in Jesus Christ who died on the cross to save you for your sins? Because if you don't, you're in trouble. And I come to you in the love of Jesus Christ. I'm not telling you this to make you shout at me and complain about what I'm telling you. I'm doing this because your soul is in jeopardy. You're going to go to the lake of fire because you've sinned against Almighty God. And then they can do what they want, but that's the battle. That's stepping out there with Goliath and actually doing a fight. For Israel and the Philistines had drawn up a battle array against army, and David, verse 22, left his supplies in the hand of the supply keeper, ran to the army and came and greeted his brothers. Then he talked with them, there was the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, coming up from the armies of the Philistines, and he spoke according to the same words. He's been doing it for 40 days. So David heard them, and all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were dreadfully afraid, not trusting God. And again, as a news item today, Jerusalem Post. This is Jerusalem Post, February 16th, 2011. That is today, right? This is what Nasrallah, he is the head of the Hezbollah, hunkered down in Lebanon, because if he shows his head, he knows he'll get killed. So he's a brave guy. Hezbollah will conquer the Galilee. He goes, Hezbollah chief Nasan Nasrallah said on Wednesday that his army should be ready for another war with Israel. He also said in a televised speech that Hezbollah will conquer the Galilee as soon as they are attacked by Israel. I just would love for them to start the war. Just please start the war. We are so ready to destroy you and to take northern Galilee. That's what he's saying today. As the Iranian ships are coming in, and they're just gleefully saying, how could we miss this time? We missed in 1948, we missed in 1956, we missed in 1967, 1973, but this time we're ready to fight the God of Israel. And we'll see if it turns out. Insanity, once again, is keep trying and coming up with the same results. And these people, these Muslim Arabs, are truly insane, as history will soon prove. So the men of Israel said, have you seen this man who has come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel. And it shall be that the man who kills him, the king will enrich with great riches, will give him his daughter, and give his father's house exemption from taxes in Israel. Now, did you say no taxes? Forget the riches and the daughter, just no tax. Some things are so constant in history is the oppression of taxes. Then David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, what shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? And the people answered him in this manner, saying, so shall it be done for the man who kills him. So basically in verse 27, they answered him, verse 25, when he asked the question in verse 26. He asked, what's going to be done for the person that does it? Oh, you know, you're going to get a girl, you're going to get riches, and you're going to get no taxes the rest of your life. Now, Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger was aroused against David and said, why did you come down here? With whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? Because it was really considered a curse to be a shepherd. It was kind of a low-life job. And a lot of times it was given to the girls. I know your pride and the insolence of your heart, for you have come down to see the battle. And David said, What have I done now? Is there not a cause? You're falsely accusing me. Now, what does this sound like? This, to me, it sounds like Paul out of Galatians. Because David has faith. Who is this guy to insult the armies of the living God? He is nothing. Do not look with your eyes at this man. Look at God and what he can do and what he's promised to do for our people if we just trust in him. He has faith. And Galatians 4:28 says, now we, brethren, as Isaac was, are children of promise. But as he who was born according to the flesh then persecuted him who was born according to the Spirit, even so it is now. Here's what you can expect. You want to serve Jesus by faith? You want to get into the battle? You want to be serious about walking with Jesus in accordance with His Word? You can expect even your own brothers who are walking by sight and not trusting in God by faith, you can expect them, who are you? I am a nobody. You know, son of a nobody who knows somebody who's the eternal God who created the heavens and the earth. And He said that He can strengthen me and He can do all things through me. Now, it's not about me. It's about the God that I serve. Then he turned, verse 30, then he turned from him toward another and said the same thing. And these people answered him as the first ones did. Now, a lot of times I've seen people get frustrated. They take a step in faith to walk with God and everybody kind of gives them a hard time. Even their unbelieving friends, their family that's churchgoers. They're getting a little bit too serious about this Jesus stuff. Oh, I just feel so bad. I think I'll go back and take care of the sheep at home. You know, is that what David did? He had his brothers and all these other men standing around mocking him, and he does not care because he spent a lot of time with Jesus. He spent a lot of time out there tending sheep, knowing what God can do. And he doesn't care. So expect, if you want to get serious with God, expect people to taunt you and just don't care. We're in a battle. Now, when the words which David spoke were heard, they repeated them to Saul. And he sent for him. Then David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of this, you know, because of him, Goliath. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said to David, you are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are a youth, and he is a man of war from his youth. And again, David and Saul know each other. Saul knows him as this little harp playing guy. You can't go against this guy, you're just a youth. But David said to Saul, your servant used to keep his father's sheep, and when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb out of the flock, I went after it and struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it arose against me, I caught it by the beard and struck and killed it. So your servant has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing he has defied the armies of the living God. I know what God can do. You know, and see, again, the heart of David, he could have let that sheep go. Oh, a big lion has it. Let it go. No, he's going to rescue the sheep. He's going to lay down his own life. He's not afraid to take care of the sheep. Jesus was not afraid to come and take care of all the sheep. And sometimes it can look to us to maybe to go, and if God is leading us to minister to a lost sheep that's being dragged away by Satan himself through some corruption of this world in the flesh, that some people say, let it go. He's a goner. She's a goner. And what God would say is a true shepherd, a true servant of Jesus, is going to say, I don't care what's going to happen. I'm going to go try and rescue that sheep. I'm going to try and keep Satan from getting that one. And, you know, we don't know how he did it. It says that he grabbed him by the, you know, grabbed the lion by the mane and killed it. He might have used his shepherd's rod, like I showed you a few weeks ago, that Maasai club that was probably similar to what David would have had. But it says he grabbed him, you know, maybe if he grabbed with both hands, you know, he just headbutted him and just, bam, you're dead, dude. I don't know. It's, again, I look forward to reruns when we get to heaven. Moreover, David said, verse 37, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go, and the Lord be with you. Can you imagine this? Because Saul cannot see by faith, because he is a man of the flesh, he's thinking, this guy is going to go off to his death. But might as well somebody go out there and challenge him. And so he's willing for other people to, you know, you go, I'm going to sit here and still be afraid for my life. So Saul clothed David with his armor, and he put on a bronze helmet on his head and also clothed him with a coat of mail. And David fastened his sword to his armor and tried to walk, for he had not tested them. And David said to Saul, I can't walk with these, for I have not tested them. So David took them off. Today, in our spiritual battle, it would be like somebody saying, here, you know, I've used hatred to get my way. And so here, put on a little bit of hatred. And that way you can go and conquer the world for Jesus and put on a little bit of lying. When you need to lie for Jesus to get your way, just do that and put on a little bit of this. And you know, this is the armor of the world. This is the world's way. What did Paul say in 2 Corinthians chapter 10? He said, I plead with you, out of the meekness and gentleness of Christ, to who is present and lowly among you, being absent and bold towards you, but I beg you that when I am present, I may not be bold with you. Verse 3, for though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. See, Saul is putting on the armor that men are used to. And Paul is saying, for the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty in God for pulling down strongholds, casting down arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity. Our war is to pull down the lies of the enemy in the hearts and minds of people going to hell. And we cannot defeat those things with worldly wisdom. We have to have the wisdom of God. Then he took his staff in his hand, and he chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook, and he put them in a shepherd's bag and a pouch which he had, and his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. And people say 5, because Goliath had 4 brothers, not because he was afraid he was going to miss. So the Philistines came and began drawing near to David, and the man who bore the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was only a youth, ruddy and good-looking. And Satan disdains us. So the Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. Now it says that he had his staff, not his rod. A shepherd had a rod and a staff. So in other words, what David is carrying out is the hooked staff of a shepherd. What are you coming out here with to just stick us with a shaft? You think I'm a sheep? I have sought God. Why did he go out with a shepherd's staff? And then he has a sling too. And the Philistine said to David, I don't have an answer. Maybe the Lord will give it to you why it was. And the Philistine said to David, come to me and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. And this is as the Arabs are saying today, too, about the nation of Israel. Then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword, with a spear, with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from you. And this day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And that is what is about to happen in the Middle East again, as it's happened before. Then all this assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. And Psalm 83 ends very similarly. Psalm 83 is a prophecy in the Psalms about a coming war where the nations surrounding Israel said, let us wipe her off the map. Let's cause her to cease from being a nation. It ends with the nations of the world knowing that God of Israel is the true God. Not that they worship him, not that they praise him, but they will know that that's the case. Do we want to finish? It's getting late. You're okay. So it was, when the Philistines arose and came and drew near to meet David, that David hurried and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. Then David put his hand in his bag and took out a stone, and he slung it and struck the Philistine in his forehead, so that the stone sank into his forehead and he fell on his face to the earth. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone and struck the Philistine and killed him, but there was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore David ran and stood over the Philistine, took his sword, drew it out of its sheath, and killed him and cut off his head with it. And when the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. You know, when Satan and all of his demons, you know, realized on the day that Jesus died on the cross, you know, they realized they were judged. But they have this time. But pretty soon Jesus is going to come and put them all away. And so David used the sword of the enemy to chop off Goliath's head. And I was really going to spend more time on this, but the Iranian reactor was that everybody in the world has been thinking for the last 2 years, there's no way Israel can let the Iranian reactor get loaded with fuel. It got loaded with fuel. There's no way the Israelis can allow the Iranian reactor to be taken critical, which it was supposed to happen a week or two ago. You know why it didn't happen? The reason why it didn't happen is because the Russians, who built the reactor for the Iranians, came to the Iranians and said, "We're sorry to tell you that you can't start our reactor because the Stuxnets, is it the, I want to make sure I get the word of this right, the Stuxnet, Stuxnet virus, worm, that Israel, or somebody, they assume Israel made it, that trashed all your centrifuges because what it did is that virus got in and told all your instruments that the centrifuges were spinning at the right speed, but actually the equipment spun up the centrifuges to cause them to fail because they were spinning so fast that the centrifugal force ruined your centrifuges, and that is why your uranium is not purifying to the level that you think you were expecting to make your nuclear weapons. And we know that that virus is actually in this reactor. And if we try and start this reactor up with your instruments saying that the source range, intermediate range, power range instruments are all right, and your rod heights are all right, and they're not right, we could Chernobyl this reactor and no one would know. And so the reactor is shut down. And it's possible that they will be using the weapons of the Arabs themselves to fall on their own heads through viruses. Iran is afraid to launch missiles because they could launch a missile with the GPS coordinates of Tel Aviv, and the Stuxnet virus could have been programmed. Tel Aviv means Damascus. And Tel Aviv might mean Tehran and all these other things. And wouldn't it be something if we get to witness a modern day? I don't know what's going to happen, but it is a fact that these missiles that are aimed at Israel should destroy her. It's a fact. Israel should be wiped out in this coming war. Something is going to happen, and it could be just like grabbing their own weapon and taking off their head. And we will be soon finding out what God has in store for them. And guess what? Then the Jews, all of a sudden, they have lots of faith. It just takes one man to have faith, and then all of a sudden, I guess God is bigger than Satan. And all of a sudden, now they're ready to go into battle because they can even see with their eyes that things are for the Lord. But really, there's very few that walk by faith or willing to have the courage to initiate by faith. But may the God of heaven and earth give us the power to do so. We're needing faith in these days. We need to have very deep faith to trust our Jesus in these troubling times. Father, we thank you for your word, and we pray that you would just truly empower us, God, to trust in you in these days and to have a deeper walk with you, a deeper faith, God. And it seems like the world's going crazy, but we know you're not, and that you have everything planned out till we are someday safely in your kingdom forever and ever and ever. In Jesus' name, amen.
prepare me to be a sanctuary, pure and holy, tried and true, with thanksgiving, I'll be a living sanctuary. Prepare me to be a sanctuary, pure and holy, tried and true, with thanksgiving, I'll be a living sanctuary.